The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with an article from the Seniors Guide magazine. It's entitled, in fact, I have two articles from that magazine. This one is entitled Checking In on Seniors. A very simple action can make a big difference. Checking in on seniors, especially those aging in place, can support their mental health and physical health, prevent crises, and more. When Gene Heckman, his wife, and their dog were found dead in their home, it struck a chord with all of us. We realized just how easily something like this could happen to the people we care about and to the importance of regular contact to avert these tragedies. However, staying in touch isn't just about ensuring your loved ones haven't had some sort of life-threatening emergency. Regular visits, phone calls, and even texts can also go a long way in preventing chronic yet serious problems like isolation, loneliness, depression, and physical and cognitive decline, especially for people living alone. According to Leslie Tripp Holland, Senior Director of Marketing and Communications of Alzheimer's Association, Georgia Chapter, a lot of times when someone is diagnosed and on their dementia journey, friends may fall away for many reasons. But if you can take 15 minutes and check in on them, they feel cared about. In partnership with Family Hospice, the Georgia chapter has launched Number One Checked In, a social media campaign that encourages people to regularly check in on their loved ones, their caregivers, and their caregivers. The program promotes community involvement by reminding everyone that small, consistent acts of kindness, like a simple check-in, can improve mental health, strengthen social ties, and even prevent crises that often go unnoticed when someone is isolated, explains Paige Powell of Family Hospice. While automated check-in services and home technology can help in monitoring someone living alone, they can't replace the warmth of familiarity. Here's how just a few minutes out of your day can benefit the older adults in your life. It increases social connection. Maybe your friend or family member can't drive anymore, or they have limited mobility that makes getting out of the house and meeting friends for dinner or other social activities difficult. According to the National Institute on Aging, lack of social interaction and the resulting loneliness can increase a person's risk of high blood pressure, heart disease, obesity, and depression. Taking them a meal or stopping by to watch TV together or just chat can keep them from becoming isolated. This interaction helps them maintain emotional connection and a sense of belonging, says Powell. Not to mention, it can simply brighten their day. It boosts cognitive health. In a study in the UK, people over 65 were asked to indicate whether they were lonely or not. This group, composed of both lonely and socially engaged seniors, was followed for more than 12 years. According to Professor James Goodwin, an expert in the physiology of aging, those who considered themselves to be habitually lonely at the end of that period experienced a 20% faster cognitive decline than their peers who had companionship. Take 89-year-old Virginia, for example. She lived alone for years. However, when she had to stop driving about a year ago, the gregarious senior had little interaction with others. Soon, family members began to witness a dramatic decline in her memory. She's now living with her daughter, who takes her out to restaurants, the grocery store, the salon for mani-pedis, and other places where Virginia can chat up anyone who comes her way and keep her brain active. It catches problems early. When you pay a senior a visit, you might notice that their home is dirty when it's usually spotless. They've forgotten to take their medications, or they've left the oven on, Or perhaps it's taking them a lot longer to answer the phone when you call, or they're sometimes not picking up at all. A regular check-in, says Powell, can alert others to changes in behavior, mood, or environment, as well as physical changes, that may signal a need for additional help. That way, you'll be able to intervene before a deadline reaches a dangerous stage, or before a decline reaches a dangerous stage. It promotes healthy habits. It's common for seniors who live alone to make a meal out of a bag of chips or not get off the couch for hours. If you can pop in now and then, you can take them a healthy lunch or dinner, or encourage them to walk with you to the mailbox or a neighbor's house while you tell them about your recent vacation. In 87-year-old Ted's case, he's much less likely to fall asleep in his recliner when his daughter comes for a visit. And when she asks him to show her the fishing lures he's been working on, he's happy to make the trek with his Rollator to display his latest creations. Even if you only have time for a call, checking in on what they've eaten that day, how much activity they've had, can be a good reminder for them. It supports caregivers. It's not always just the senior who benefits from these check-ins. If your friend or neighbor has a spouse or adult child caring for them, this person, who may not have seen another human being in far too long, will often appreciate your stopping by as well. A check-in provides emotional support and relief from the feeling of carrying everything alone, Powell notes. It's a reminder that their work is seen and valued, and it offers a moment to share, vent, or rest. Often, we don't know what we can do to help family members, neighbors, and friends whose lives are restricted by illness or age. A simple check-in is something that's easy to do, however. It can pay big dividends. Holland adds, "Anytime we can do something to make the day a little brighter for someone else, it also makes us feel good. So, it's a win-win." This piece was written by Terry L. Jones, who's been writing educational and information topics for the senior industry for over 10 years and is a frequent and longtime contributor to Seniors Guide. Next, from the same source, let's look at health benefits of coffee and tea. You may have heard about potential health benefits of coffee and tea, but is either one a better choice? Howard Lewine, MD of Harvard Health, breaks down the benefits. Questions. I have been a coffee drinker for as long as I remember. My wife has switched to tea and claims it gives her a similar morning boost. But what about the health benefits of coffee versus tea? Answer. Many studies have shown that both coffee and tea drinkers may experience health benefits compared to people who don't consume these beverages. However, it's important to note that all these studies are observational, which means we can't say for sure that coffee or tea leads explicitly to better health outcomes. However, there are plausible reasons why coffee and tea may be connected to health benefits, beginning with caffeine. Studies have focused more on caffeine than the other ingredients in coffee and tea. Results have found that caffeine directly enhances alertness and concentration while combating fatigue. It can also improve athletic performance, most likely related to an increase in adrenal hormone levels and a metabolic energy boost. Caffeine may even elevate mood. Regular coffee provides a bigger caffeine punch per ounce compared to tea. That's why most people reach for coffee when they need a stimulant. Generally, an 8-ounce cup of regular coffee contains about 80 to 100 milligrams mg of caffeine. The caffeine content in teas varies. For example, black teas have 40 to 70 milligrams per 8-ounce serving. A cup of green tea tends to contain less caffeine, about 30 to 35 grams per cup. Other teas have less, and many herbal teas contain minimal, if any, caffeine. A total daily caffeine intake of up to 400 milligrams is safe, Most studies examining the link between caffeine consumption and better health outcomes suggest that 300 milligrams daily is the sweet spot. However, even small amounts of caffeine can make some people jittery or anxious or disrupt sleep. Both beverages are also rich in antioxidants like polyphenols, which help reduce chronic inflammation and neutralize cell-damaging free radicals. Green and black tea tend to have higher polyphenol content than other teas and are close to the high antioxidant amounts in coffee. Coffee drinking is associated with a host of health benefits, including less heart disease, type 2 diabetes, fatty liver, depression, and cognitive decline. Regular coffee consumption is also linked to longer life. Because of the variety of teas, there are fewer documented health benefits. However, a large observational study published online September 17, 2024, by the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism found that drinking 200 to 300 milligrams of caffeinated tea or coffee per day was linked to a lower risk of diabetes, coronary artery disease, and stroke. From a health standpoint, there is no reason to change from coffee to tea, but you might enjoy sampling some caffeinated teas to add some variety to your morning beverage. Howard Lewine, MD, is an internist at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston and assistant professor at Harvard Medical School. For additional consumer health information, please visit www.health.harvard.edu. Now I'm switching over to AARP, the magazine, and an article entitled Money Stress and How to Tame It, which we have started previously, and it's very long, and this is the beginning of part two. The power of talk. The right conversations with the right people can calm your money worries, and this is by Laura Petreca. When it comes to money stress, talk isn't cheap. It has real value. New research indicates that opening up about your money worries can help reduce anxiety, even if your audience comprises strangers on the internet, and even if you get no advice in response. Communicating about money requires organizing your thoughts, explains Matt Meister, an assistant professor at University of San Francisco and co-author of a recent paper on money stress. And that process, he says, can lead to a greater sense of calm. It's not that you have to share a spreadsheet or your bank information with somebody, Meister says. Just generally talking through this type of thing can have real and pretty quick benefits. But whom should you talk to about your money problems and how can they help you? Follow these guidelines for more productive conversations. Friends and relatives. If someone in your family might be of help, the first step is to let go of any shame or taboo you feel about discussing money problems. Silence only increases financial stress, says Ramiro Marmolejo, a financial planner and founder of Financial Rubrics in San Antonio. When people finally talk through their finances, it's remarkable how much anxiety disappears. Do this. Be selective. Decide if you want support or advice, then explain your needs. Also, pick the right confidant. If you want solutions, don't go to your big feelings person, said Jonathan Kolmetz, a financial planner and licensed mental health therapist in Houston. Simply need someone to listen. Don't go to your problem solver, he says. Set expectations. Give a preview of the topic and how long you think it will take to discuss. For instance, you could say to a spouse, I'm feeling anxious about our investments. Do you have 30 minutes after dinner to talk about this? Maintain perspective. Good advice is rooted in your goals and circumstances, says Jordan Gilberti, founder of Sage Wealth Group in Tampa, Florida. If it sounds too easy, too extreme, or doesn't consider your full picture, that's a red flag. Online forums. Meister and his co-authors found that online posts were especially effective at easing stress. Writing, he hypothesizes, gives you a greater sense of control than speaking. You can slow down, edit your thoughts, and decide what to share. So do this. Be choosy with communities. The internet can be filled with unsympathetic commenters, criminals, and terrible advice. Look for online groups that screen new members and have active moderators, suggests Andrew W. Lowe, a professor of finance at the MIT Sloan School of Management. And don't share identifying details. Discretion reduces your risk of getting scammed and of losing your anonymity. If you're putting something out there about your mother, sister-in-law, or pay raise, who's to say what could not be seen or found, says Kolmetz. Filter advice. Alongside support and solidarity might come advice that's inappropriate or fraudulent. People have their own biases, personal circumstances, and life experiences, Gilberti says. Assume that any offer to connect you with an investment or help manage your money is a scam. Financial advisors. Talking to a professional may be the right choice when your stress involves major financial decisions that can benefit from specific expertise, including major life transitions like retirement or estate planning. So do this. Value compatibility. Meet with different advisors to learn about their credentials, experience, services, and fees. AARP's Interview and Advisor Guide at aarp.org/interview-and-advisor can help you select the right professional. Match the expertise to your situation. Along with good rapport, you need someone who has experience helping clients with the challenges you face. An advisor who works mostly with wealthy doctors, for example, might not be a good fit for a school teacher. And avoid the hard sell. Helpful advice centers around education and empowerment. Marmolillo says, harmful advice pressures you toward a quick decision or a single product that claims to solve everything. Then there's therapists. For stress that can't be relieved by informal chats or professional financial guidance, you might want to talk through psychological issues at the root of your troubles. Do this. Find a mental health professional. Is money stress damaging your relationships? Does it hang over your whole life? Are you spending compulsively? Consider turning to a trained, licensed professional, such as a psychiatrist, psychologist, or a clinical social worker. Ask friends or medical and professional providers for referrals. Consider a specialist. If your issues aren't traumatic, you might consult someone in the small but growing field of financial therapy, which straddles finance and mental health. Therapists include mental health professionals focused on money issues and financial advisors particularly interested in the psychology of money. You can find a directory of practitioners at financialtherapyassociation.org. Now, we do have a sidebar here, the cost of dementia. When my wife, Linda, started experiencing dementia, she asked me to not put her in a nursing home if I could help it. In late 2023, though, she stopped recognizing me. She was afraid of me. Her physician suggested I hire a full-time caregiver. I had wanted to retire, but I kept working so I could afford that. When her caregiver had to take 8 weeks off, I got time off from work, but no pay. I started depleting savings. Caregiving is costing me $41,000 a year. At the same time, I really enjoy that my wife can stay around things familiar to her. Our family and friends visit her weekly. She gets a big smile on her face. That's very important. And this was from James Parker, 60, of Allegheny County, Virginia. Now, next time we will look at part 3, how to be a calm investor. Now, moving on to this article from AARP, The Bulletin, under the heading of Your Life, a place to get new guidance. Older volunteers provide free counseling on friendship benches. This is by Christina and Zito. A few times a month, Robin Baxter heads to a senior center in Washington, D.C. to meet up with her, quote, grandparent, Angela Jasper. The two women sit on a bench and talk about life. A mere 12 years in age separate these two women. Grandparent isn't a family role, but a volunteer position. Jasper, 76, gives her time to Friendship Bench DC, a program launched in 2024 in which older women lend a helpful ear to others. These visitors share their feelings and discuss their problems, usually 45 minutes to an hour per session. Baxter, 64, tells Jasper about her concerns, including her unstable housing situation and family conflicts. She has seen a traditional therapist, Baxter says, but it just didn't suit me. She was talking down to me. Miss Angela listens to me. I tell her all the time, I really appreciate your ears. What are friendship benches? The Washington, D.C. program is the work of Help Age USA, a nonprofit devoted to advancing the rights and well-being of older people. It currently includes 10 grandparents who meet with people in need at sites around the city, including social service organizations, schools, recreation centers, and houses of worship. Another 12 grandparents will begin their service soon. The project is an official adaptation of the Friendship Bench program, which started almost 20 years ago in Zimbabwe to provide counseling in a nation with limited mental health services. The Washington grandparents aren't licensed therapists, but they do receive some training for the role. They're more like non-judgmental, compassionate friends who will listen patiently, keep the visitor's secrets, and ask questions to get them to think and make positive changes. The sessions are free. Grandmothers have this amazing ability to convey empathy, says Dixon Chibanda, a psychiatrist who founded the program in Zimbabwe and wrote the book, The Friendship Bench, How 14 Grandmothers Inspired a Mental Health Revolution. Other organizations and individuals around the U.S. are eager to begin their own Friendship Bench programs, said Cindy Cox Roman, president and CEO of Help Age USA. Some similar efforts have sprung up, such as Arizona State University's All Ears Friendship Bench program, in which older adults volunteer to sit on benches next to the sign, I'm all ears, talk to me about anything, encouraging students to stop and chat. And Friendship Bench NOLA, created at Southern University at New Orleans, launched in September. It calls its volunteers supporters. They are community members of various ages who are already doing healing work, says Carol Bibelli, 76, a community health professional who helped start the program. The power of age and wisdom. Cox Roman says having older people in the role is the key to the program's success. It's about the iconic role of grandparents being that safe space, she says, the person you could always turn to for support. Volunteer Teresa Kelly, a 76-year-old retired elementary school teacher, points to one Friendship Bench NDC visitor who touched her heart, a 17-year-old boy with concern for his mother who had cancer while grieving the death of his grandmother. He felt like he wasn't doing enough for his family, Kelly says. I helped him realize that he couldn't solve the world, but there were things he could do to find joy, and I told him I could see such hope in him. It was beautiful to see him change. The last time we met, he was looking forward to high school graduation. When they say goodbye, he told me he loved me, she says with a smile. I told him I love him too. The author of this piece, Christiana Ionizito, is a staff writer and director for AARP. All right, now to AARP the Bulletin, and we have time for a few money-saving tips. And these are under dental care. Time procedures to maximum coverage. Most dental insurers offer a maximum annual payout, such as $1,500. Once you blow through that, you're usually paying out of pocket. For pricey procedures running above that maximum, spread out the services when possible. One appointment in December and one in January will reduce your share of the bill. Also, visit a dental school. Check out the website of local colleges and universities to find out if their dental students offer care. Fees can be up to 50% lower than private practice charges, and they often accept insurance. Stop problems early. Many insurance companies covers 80% of the cost of filling a cavity once your annual deductible is met, which may run $150 to $300 for one or two teeth. But if your cavity grows into a more complex problem that requires advanced restorative work, your insurer typically pays a smaller share of the more expensive bill, say 50% toward the cost of a crown that can run $500 and up. The price of letting the problem linger, at least $220, and sometimes substantially more. Now let's look at shopping apps. Automate comparison shopping. While you shop from your phone or computer, apps and browser extensions can work in the background, finding the best promo codes and comparing prices across various retailers. Popular programs include Retail Me Not, Honey, Shop Savvy, Coupon Cabin, and Capital One Shopping. Retail Me Not, for example, has thousands of discount codes, some not available elsewhere, that can be automatically added at checkout. Shop Savvy lets you compare prices across thousands of websites and alerts you if an item you've been eyeing goes on sale. Earn cash back, an easy way to save on items you're already buying, such as groceries and household staples, is to sign up for a cash back app or platform. Then, when you shop at participating retailers, you'll get back a percentage of your purchase, usually 2 to 10% for a dollar value. The money is usually sent through PayPal or Venmo or by check. Check out programs such as Retail Me Not and Rakuten, that's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, or Ibotta is great for groceries. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading from the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.